Right, we're recording.
Recording, everybody. Hello, hello.
What up, what up?
Welcome to Girl, What You Watching?
Yes, where we spill the tea on what we're currently watching on TV. I'm Natasha.
And I'm Justine.
And today we are joined by a very special guest who will be joining us a little bit later. Her name is Les Alfred. She is the founder of the Balanced Black Girl podcast and blog and community. She'll be joining us today to talk all things wellness, being a Black woman in the wellness space, also similarly very white space like us with Bachelor Nation.
Yep.
So we have a really good conversation with her and her experience, and we also get caught up on what she's currently reading. She's a big book girl, so it was nice getting some suggestions from her.
Yeah.
Today I'll also be catching you up on Vanderpump Rules. And what about you, Justine? What are you gonna be talking about?
Yeah, I have just a few little recommendations for consumption. Just some nice, easy, light things. The Vince Staples Show and the Kacey Musgraves album. And then I do my personal review of Oppenheimer.
Which is hilarious. And I said it. I think Justine should do this.
I think I should. Yeah.
This should be a new thing. You watch a movie that you would not watch and then just come and tell us about it from your perspective.
Yeah. I think I should. Yeah.
You should.
Some like classics.
Yes. I have many suggestions for you, friends.
Yeah.
Or friends. Shows or movies that I know you would not normally watch.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I want you to watch it.
I think I should do this on a monthly basis. I think I should.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be cultural things that come up that I don't know what they are and I don't know what they're from. And they're usually from movies that I've never watched.
Okay.
So
yeah.
I should watch them.
Want to be part of the conversation. Yeah. Anyways, before we dive in with Les, we do have some pop culture things to chat about first. You said there's something going on with Drea Michelle.
Yes, Drea Michelle and Joey Chavis. Don't care, but they are having very similar things going on right now, which is, I think, quite interesting, created some quite interesting conversation on the internet.
A throwback to Love and Hip Hop. I have not thought about Drea in years.
Love it.
When you said her name, I was like, who? Where is she from?
Basketball Wives, I think. Drea Wives is loose. Wife? Yeah.
Who was she dating? I thought she was Love and Hip Hop.
She dated everybody. She's dated everyone on the planet Earth.
She has been with, Oh, yeah, you're right. Basketball Wives LA. That's right.
Yeah.
Damn, I forgot all about this young lady. Okay. Yeah, I'm curious. What's going on with her?
Yeah.
Kate Middleton, the saga continues.
The saga continues.
Just a quick little update there.
Yeah.
God. Caitlyn Jenner and Lamar Odom are up to something. I want to tell you about it.
So nervous about what this is.
And then a quick update on Jennifer Lopez's tour.
Oh, my God. We'll talk about it in the pre-show.
We'll chat about it. If you want to listen to this episode ad-free with our juicy pre-show, join the Rose Garden over at Patreon. Head to patreon.com/number2blackgirls, number one Rose. You can also watch us on video. You can join us for Two Black Girls Watch, our weekly reaction content. Currently, we are rewatching Broad City, which is one of our favorite shows. We're having such a blast. And we just wrapped Millionaire Matchmaker. And before that was Insecure Season 3. So check out the Rose Stems tier on Patreon. And you can try out a Patreon membership with a 7-day free trial. So might as well give it a whirl. Okay. We are so excited to welcome to Girl What You Watching, Les Alfred. Les is the founder of the Balanced Black Girl podcast and blog, a community connecting Black women with experts, gurus, and a mindful community. Every week on her podcast, you're welcomed into a treasured sharing circle of everyday health, self-care, and personal development guidance. Les's community is really a friendly, accessible space for you and your wellness-minded friends to find balance, create healthy habits, and invite joy into your lives and hear from leading voices in the space as well. We were recently on Balanced Black Girl podcast in an episode, a part of Les's friendship series that y'all should check out. Justine and I spoke very candidly about our working relationship, our friendship, how we've maintained our nearly 20-year friendship while working together. And so now we're really excited to have Les here today to chat a little bit about wellness and all that good stuff, and also catch us up on what she's watching on TV or reading. You know, we know she's a book girly as well. So please welcome Les Alfred.
Woo! Thank you for having me, ladies. I'm excited to be here.
I know. Welcome.
So excited to have you. So we're going to start with some warm-up questions. So you recently moved to New York City. And where did you move from? Can you remind us?
LA.
LA. Ew. Okay. Yeah.
Not
I have to work on that. I have to work on it. I'm sorry. LA. I'm sorry, y'all. I love y'all. I love y'all.
I'm not from LA, so I don't take offense to that.
Okay. Yes. And LA is just like so extra friendly. That's why it weirds me out because everybody's so friendly.
Is it?
So it's
Are
a
they?
Compliment. They're, you know what it is? They're nice and not kind. And New Yorkers are kind and not nice. That's like a truth for sure. Okay. Everybody knows that, I think.
Justine and I were there. We were so shocked by how nice everyone was. Like just walking on the street, everybody seemed so happy and like saying hi to us. It felt almost like the South,
saying
like
hi.
That hospitality.
Yeah.
But we were like, is everybody just happy because it's the sun is shining and the beach is close? And
yes,
right.
There's weed on every corner.
Adequate vitamin D levels.
Yes, right.
That was nice. I was surprised.
Yeah. What's the most surprising thing about living in New York City?
Funny enough, I mean, not to contradict everything we just said, I actually feel like people here have been a lot nicer than I was anticipating.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of stereotypes of like aggression and hardness, and I don't know if I have felt that here. It's actually been kind of the opposite. I feel like people have been really nice in ways that I wasn't expecting.
Nice. I agree. I think New York gets a bad rap for that. I feel like people are not that bad. And if anything, like whenever and the way I gauge this too, whenever I'm going to the airport and if I need to use the subway and I'm, you know, traveling with my suitcase, someone always helps me.
Yep.
Always helps me. I think the worst city, the meanest city I've ever been in was in Paris. I was struggling with my bags and not a single person turned to say anything to help me. In New York, someone will always help me.
Yes.
So,
shout out to that is so true. Yeah. New York, especially New Yorkers are always so kind, I find.
I think so.
Yeah. It's a lot of people who commute here are rough, but... Yeah, New Yorkers are kind. What, or who, I should say, is on your Mount Rushmore of wellness?
My Mount Rushmore of wellness.
It could be creators, authors.
There's a lot of problematic ones. So if you want to have fun, we can do a problematic Mount Rushmore if you want. I think that'd be
fun. You know what? That is such a great question that I'm struggling to answer because I feel like so much of my own wellness journey has been so self-guided and it's been such a process of just self-discovery and looking for things that I didn't really find in other people or in external things. I don't know if I have a Mount Rushmore and I hate to like not answer a question. I'm like, I can't even think of like one name that I'm like, yeah, this person was like a kind of North Star in wellness. It's just has felt like such an internal thing.
That's
is there any I'm curious if there's anyone whose book that you read that I mean we can get into it too but just like really stood out to you as something that you like always look back to or
Okay, so here's the thing, and I'm sure we'll talk about this later. I'm a fiction girly. I don't love like wellness books, productive books.
Yeah.
Can't stand that
self-helpy
books. Can't, no.
Wow, interesting.
No.
Okay.
Can't stand it. Give me a story. Give me you know. But you know what's interesting, and this is also is maybe going to sound like a little bit stereotypical. If I can think of some wellness role models, I probably would say my dad and my granny, his mom, because I think that they were some of my initial just kind of explorations into the space. Like I remember going to health food stores with my dad as a kid and you could literally to this day be like, my back hurts in this specific area. And he'll tell you like what supplement to take or so many times as a kid, I remember him having his headphones on and he would listen to his, he called them like relaxation tapes on this old Walkman. And I'm like, oh, looking back on it, he was doing like guided meditation.
Affirmations,
and so all of this, and so and the journaling and all of that stuff, like he's been doing for ages and very similar with my granny. So, I mean, I guess the two of them would be two people on my Mount Rushmore, even though, you know, that may not be as helpful to everybody else.
That's perfect. But I mean, that's even just paying attention to the people around you. Like I've noticed as I've gotten older, like, little things that my dad does. He reads a lot of affirmation type of books. he keeps notes in a very particular way on, like, you know, even with his patients or anybody he meets them, he writes their name, he writes down some details. Like, he has his own little quirks that I've, like, noticed more as I've gotten older. So I think that's a good one.
You have had some amazing guests on your show, and you do a lot of interviews. Do you have a favorite interview moment?
Ooh, a favorite interview moment. Yeah, you know what? I recently got to interview Tembi Locke, who is the author of From Scratch, and her book From Scratch is what became the Netflix series From Scratch.
Oh, her. Okay, yeah. Yes. Okay.
She is amazing. And honestly, I felt like sitting down and talking to her, it didn't feel like an interview. I almost forgot that we were even doing a podcast. It was just such a rich conversation where I didn't feel like I was interviewing her. I just felt like I got to experience her. And it was like such a beautiful back and forth conversation in ways that I don't know if I've ever had on the podcast. And so I felt like that hour that I was sitting and talking to her was like this little time warp of just pure like engagement that I really, really loved and felt so like uplifted by.
Wow. I gotta listen to that episode. That's nice. It's always a hit or miss or a crapshoot with guests. So yeah, that's nice when you really hit a flow with them. Yeah.
And it's, you know, having such an interview based show. I mean, oftentimes like my focus is the guests and I'm not there to talk about myself or what I think or what my experiences have been. I'm solely there to shine a light on them. And so sometimes when a guest is able to kind of return the favor and include me in the conversation in that way, it is really, really nice.
And Tembi's the one, she went to Italy, her husband passed away of cancer, right?
Yes, she's
an amazing storyteller. Really,
amazing.
Really good.
Yeah. So that actually, the episode hasn't come out yet. It's coming out at the end of March, so it's coming soon. Okay. But I recorded it like a month ago, and it still just like has stuck with me. So nice. Good.
Oh, we'll look out for that one. So your platform, Balanced Black Girl, which started as a blog and still is a very active blog, it has obviously progressed into a podcast, a whole online community, and it's very dedicated to amplifying women of color, specifically in the wellness space. I'm curious, did you set out with that mission to disrupt the wellness space? You know, it is a pretty white women dominated sphere. Was that a part of your mission? Like you wanted to disrupt that space?
Yes. With Balanced Black Girl, that was the intention of Balanced Black Girl. Before I started Balanced Black Girl, I had another wellness blog and brand, which was how I got into content. And that was a little bit different. The intention for that was I had been spending several years in the wellness space. I'd started off as a personal trainer and just kind of had my own wellness journey where I just took it way too far. I was over-exercising. I had a horrible relationship with my body, with my career, working in fitness. So when I initially got into content, my whole thing was like, how do I find a sense of balance with this? How can I learn how to take care of myself without taking it too far? So when I first got into content, it was more so me documenting my journey to figuring out how can I adopt these habits with a sense of balance without taking it too far. And after a few years of that, that was when I got in the wellness space. I started, you know, going to more studios, getting invited to more things and being like, where are we at? Why are we not here? Mm-hmm. And so then I pivoted to create Balanced Black Girl for that reason.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool. I feel like the wellness space has been infiltrated, particularly in this country, by people who are snatching from a lot of Western medicine and like Ayurvedic medicine and things like that. Like a lot of people are snatching from non-white people and capitalizing on it, which is something that should be disrupted. I think it really deserves a disruption. And I think your approach to wellness and your approach to being quote unquote balanced is cool because you talk about like finance, you talk about motherhood, you talk about all kinds of stuff. And I think that's the true definition of like what people want versus like drink this raspberry tea. It's like a little bit deeper than that.
Absolutely. You know, I have a lot of people ask me, well, what is your wellness routine? I'm like, my whole life is a wellness routine. Everything, everything that I do throughout, it's all day. It's everything that I do. It's everything I breathe. It's everything that I'm doing. I'm thinking like, how is this promoting wellness? Is this helping or is this hurting? It's not necessarily like a set aside thing that I do each day. It's how am I adding wellness into everything I'm already doing each day?
Well, speaking of that, I was wondering, because you have two sizable platforms, social platforms, right? And then you have a successful podcast. Because of those two things, do you find yourself like setting boundaries with your social media as far as like on my personal Instagram, I don't follow anybody who we follow on Two Black Girls Instagram. Do you find that you have to put up those kinds of boundaries as well on social?
That's a good question. I think I used to. I used to, for sure. I used to have to put a lot of boundaries around, you know, setting app limits and things on my phone and doing stuff like that. I have found that as time goes on, and maybe this is also just me getting old, is that I'm less interested in consuming content as I used to be. It's just is like spending a lot of time consuming a lot of content just isn't – it just doesn't appeal to me as much. And so I think because my interests are now different, that has kind of become the boundary for me. I'm just like, I'm not interested in what people are kind of posting and doing, which is very hypocritical because I need people to be interested in what I'm posting
interested
and doing.
In you.
But also too, I think when you are a creator, you just view that stuff differently. And I almost think as a creator, I am there to create. I'm not there to consume. And I think that I would almost have a harder time with social media if I were there solely consuming other people's content and not putting anything out there.
I feel very similar to you, Liz. I've talked about it on this pod. I have a very interesting relationship with the social media world because we are creating content, but I love being on the creation side. It's the consumption side that I'm trying to figure out my boundaries. And because we, you know, we live on these platforms, right? We're there, we're on them all day because we're posting on it. And then of course it, you know, the algorithm sucks you in, but it's like how to set up those boundaries. And I like what you said about like, you view it as a means of creation and you have to be a lot more, I guess, thoughtful about the consumption aspect. So we over here in Two Black Girls, One Rose, we similarly disrupted a very white dominated space, which is Bachelor Nation. And pretty much just like off rip, our presence was very rebellious because our commentary just sounded very different. We were very critical of a show that was very beloved. We can very much relate to you because you're similarly, you know, a Black woman in a white space and trying to disrupt. Is your audience, I guess first question, is your audience mostly Black women? Is it mixed bag, white women?
For the podcast, yes, I would say it's mostly Black women. I would say my social media audience is probably more mixed, has a little bit of a mix of everything. Yeah, but I think the name of the podcast gets
you would think,
pretty
right?
direct.
You would think. You really can't choose your audience, though. I can't believe how many white women listen to this.
Yeah.
I love them, but I'm like, we are barking in your ears. Y'all like this? So are there, knowing that or just regardless, sometimes thinking about your audience or not, like were there specific narratives that you wanted to intentionally shift? Were there specific topics in wellness that you wanted to talk, like you wish were being talked about more, that you wanted to talk about more on your platform?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've been so interested in wellness for a long time, and I won't get into my like long, boring wellness origin story because I've like told it many times. But when I first started getting interested in wellness and seeking out wellness content, a lot of who was putting stuff out there, who was being heard in the space, were usually white, and a lot of it was like white men. And so I found myself having to do some mental gymnastics from the content I was hearing of like, okay, you know, they're citing this study or this thing, And how do I twist that to make that relevant for me? And so I wanted to not have to do that mental gymnastics. I wanted to hear from experts and from thought leaders who I didn't have to translate things from to make it relevant to me. I just wanted to get it straight from the source that it could be relevant. And I thought that my audience maybe felt the same way. And so a lot of it was like me wanting to introduce my audience to other Black and Brown women in wellness who they could learn directly from so that they didn't have to do that mental gymnastics either.
Mm-hmm. That is such a gift that you have given your audience, because I found even now at the age of 34, I'm in a serious relationship. We have this podcast. I'm like moving in this direction, right? And I find that I can't really take the advice of a lot of white men because I'm like, none of that applies to me. Like, right. You don't talk about coming home and like taking care of your kids. I have to think about those kinds of things. You don't talk about the kind of like energy levels of decision making, because you just get home and everything's probably decided for you. You probably have dinner already ready for you. You probably have your kid there. Probably their outfit is already done. Like, so they don't talk about a lot of the stuff that's going to come up for women, and definitely not the kind of stuff that's going to come up for Black women. And so that really is a gift that you've given your audience. So thank you as part of your audience.
Oh, thank you.
And wellness, you know, as we've spoken about, is for everyone. It can kind of feel exclusive. It can really feel very intimidating to a lot of people. And I think being rebellious in a wellness space too can sometimes feel like maybe a little bit preachy. I don't know if you've heard of Dr. Deepika Chopra. She was on Dear Media for a little aha minute there. But she has my favorite wellness phrase of all time, which is balance is a lie. That changed my life. And when you think about the big names in the game, it's dominated by white women. We have the Goops of the world. We have the Pooshes. We have all that. So when you started off kind of creating an audience, doing your storyboarding for Balanced Black Girl, did you just start with like, okay, my dad and my grandma, and that's who I'm going to look towards? Or did you start off with like the big, huge conglomerates like the Pooshes and the Goops?
No, it was more so like, what is the wellness advice that I want to hear that I'm not getting anywhere? Yeah, yeah. What is it that I want to hear that nobody is talking about in a way that I want to hear it, you know? And a lot of it was more so me seeking out the resources that I couldn't find anywhere else. And I mean, it sounds kind of woo-woo, but a lot of it too has been just like my intuition with the topics that I decide that we cover and the guests who we have, is just more of like, what is my gut telling me that we need to bring to the show? I'm feeling pulled towards a conversation about this, so I'm going to explore that. And I'm pretty adamant about having very little outside influences. I also personally don't listen to a lot of like wellness podcasts anymore now that I have my own, because I don't want to be regurgitating someone else's ideas or even that's in your subconscious when you listen to it. Even if you're not trying to mimic or imitate something, you naturally do because it's in your brain. And then a month later, after you listen to someone else say it, you think that you thought it. And so I'm very intentional about not consuming a ton of other, you know, wellness media or podcasts that are similar to mine, because I want it to be really unique. And I, from the beginning, always wanted Balanced Black Girl to be kind of unlike anything else out there.
And I think doing that too just creates, just kind of holds yourself accountable to being authentic to your voice. If you're listening too much, similar with us, like I don't really listen to any other Bachelor podcasts.
Yeah.
Maybe before we're going to record a collab, I'll listen and kind of like get to know them a little bit. But otherwise, like, yeah, it's like you don't want to be tainted by outside voices. You really want to bring your true voice, particularly on your podcast, which is very interview based. You don't want to be showing up any other person but yourself, right?
Right. I don't want to ask the same questions that this person's been asked 97 times on the, you know, press circuit they're doing.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for just sharing a bit about your platform. And I really encourage everybody listening to go check out your blog, to listen to your podcast. You have such a trove of episodes, over 200. And as Justine said, it's not just the typical wellness topic that you think. It's friendship, it's sisterhood, it's entrepreneurship, it's financial health. And so, yeah, I just really want to give that plug, that extra plug. Mm-hmm. But yeah, why don't you kick us off, Les? This is Girl What You Watching. Catch us up. What have you been watching lately or reading? Just share one thing.
Absolutely. I know I was so nervous for this because literally I use my TV to play Spotify.
That's it?
Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, what was the last thing I watched? I was like, the last thing I watched was Risa Tisa's Who the F Did I Marry? That was the last thing that I actually watched.
Oh, and like, God, wait, did you watch the whole thing?
I did. I had it on while I was doing other things. But yeah, I'd be like,
that's because you don't watch other TV. That's why.
I don't watch other TV. Yeah. So yeah, cool. That was like the last thing that I watched.
Man. That's hilarious. Oh my God.
Well, we've been keeping up with Risa Tisa. Not the Who the F Did I Marry. I could not spend all of those minutes.
Yeah.
And listening to this lady.
Yeah. I would have it on, like, I have a Bluetooth speaker in my bathroom. So it's like when I was in the shower, when I was doing my hair, I would just let it all just play through. Wow. Because it was long. It was very long.
What's like the most shocking thing that came out for you from the Risa Tisa story? Or what stood out to you the most? Because I only know little updates from Justine, but I'm so curious where the story took us.
I mean, I think just the level of just the great lengths that that man went through to tell those lies. It is like so much more effort to lie that much than it is to just do whatever it is you said that you were going to do. But I think probably the fake phone conversations is when I was like, really?
Oh, yeah,
like this man would pretend to be on the phone for like 45 minutes every day to siblings that he was in no contact with. Like that, I think I was like, that is very interesting.
Oh my God.
But yeah, just the great lengths that someone would go through to lie that much is was interesting to me.
God, hilarious. So yeah, catch us up. What do you want to start with?
So what I have been doing is I have been reading up a storm. At the time that we are recording this, I am currently on my 13th book of the year, which I have been reading through one of Kennedy Ryan's old series. If y'all are not familiar with Kennedy Ryan, y'all being listeners, you've got to read her books. She is an incredible Black woman romance author. Very excited for her. She actually is the guest on my podcast this week, getting to chat with her was super amazing. But I went back and read the very first series that she published called the Bennett series, which has four different books: When You Are Mine, Loving You Always, Be Mine Forever, and Until I'm Yours.
Holy shit. She's not playing around with these titles.
No, she is not. She is not. And she's written like 20 plus books, but I'm currently reading the fourth book in that series, which is Until I'm Yours. And it is, the series is intense, but so good.
Wow. And so these are, you said romance novels. So like steamy little sex portions.
There is some of that. Yes, there's definitely some of that. These ones I would say aren't the best part. These ones aren't as steamy as some of her later books. There's definitely some steam in them for sure. But yeah, there's some of that. Some of that good stuff.
So what is this one that you're reading currently called, Yuka?
So I'm currently reading Until I'm Yours, which is the fourth book in the series. Wow.
So what is this one about? Is it following tracking a couple or is it new?
It is. Yeah. So this series kind of all revolves around a group of friends would be like a very generous term, but like this group of young people who are all kind of interconnected. So at the beginning of the series, we meet this group of people. You have these two male best friends who have been best friends their entire lives. One of them becomes engaged to a young woman and his best friend comes into town and immediately falls in love with that woman. And it's like triangle between the three of them.
A triangle, so she entertains this.
You're gonna have to read the book. So the first two books of the series are all about that love triangle between the two of them.
Oh, boy.
And what happens there?
That sounds like the best man. Ain't that the premise, kind
of? Oh, yeah.
A little bit of that. There's a little bit of that. Yeah. And then I don't know how to describe the rest of the series without, like, giving it away. And then the rest, the other two books are just the other entanglements that ensue amongst this group of people.
Okay. Are you – so do you love romance novels? Is that your genre? Like, what is it about those books?
I do. Yeah. I would say it's a couple of things. I mean, one, I'm a big fan of rom-coms. So, like, growing up, rom-coms were always my favorite movies. I loved, like, a 90s, 2000s, you know, teen movie.
We had a good time.
Rom-com.
We had a good time for rom-coms.
Yeah. I feel like our age group, we just really had a great, like, run of that genre. Mm-hmm. And because that genre is not really happening in film anymore, I do feel like it is very alive and well in books. And so now I feel like I turn to books to get that, where it's not happening in movies.
Yeah, I never thought about that. That is true. It's been a hot minute since we had, like, a solid romantic comedy. It's been tough in the movies. And even just getting original stories. Everything is a remake as well.
Exactly.
But I like that you're turning to books instead.
Yeah. And I think, too, it's, you know, something with romance novels, you often have a happy ending. You have kind of a conflict that is resolved. And I think just with how crazy the world is, it's like something that doesn't stress me out. I'm like, okay, even if the plot gets a little stressful, I know we're going to have a happy ending along the way. I know that this is going to be, like, tied up neatly in a bow. And I feel like for my anxiety, it is just, like, very helpful to know that I'm going to get a happy ending at the end of all of this.
That tracks for so many things. I think that's why people rewatch shows. That's why people watch cooking videos. That's why people watch people fixing things, because they know at the end it's going to, like, be all nice and tied up in a bow and nice.
Exactly.
I'm curious, though, with the Kennedy Ryan series, because it's, you said it's a series, same characters over and over.
Yes.
Oh, geez.
But each book focuses on a different kind of couple within the group.
Got it. Okay. I was like, is this the same couple throughout the years? Because I just finished watching One Day. I don't know if you've heard of that show on Netflix, but it's like following one couple over the course of 20 years, and it just really brings you on a roller coaster ride. So I was like, I'm excited for these books, but is it going to tear me up? Like, I don't know. Nice.
Les, are you in a book club?
No. Okay. I also don't like book clubs. And this is like a very controversial thing.
That's very controversial, Les.
So controversial.
Interesting.
I hate book clubs. I have had book clubs, did not enjoy the experience. It is just like such a – I'm so weird when it comes to books. I love the process of, like, finding a book and reading it purely off of vibes and what sounds good for me. And so book clubs stress me out, because it's like, okay, then I have to get a group of people to agree to want to read this whole book. And then I need to read it at the same pace that we're all reading it to have these discussions. So it's like, I can't read what I want to read, when I want to read it, how I want to read it.
Okay.
It just, getting other people in the mix, it stresses me out. Like, reading is my activity of, like, happiness for me. And then when I get other people's input of what they want and when they read it and what they have time for, then it's stressful.
Your face.
It's stressful.
You look triggered.
I am quite triggered. I am quite triggered.
Oh, God. That's so funny. So I've been in a book club since 2017. My friend and I from grad school, we started it together. The last, like, 2 years, I've kind of, like, dipped in and out. I was, like, planning a wedding, was too busy, and then my issue is I have a problem with buying books. I won't read them. I just buy them. And so I have a whole bookcase full of books, half of which I have not read. And I'm just, like, waiting for the day. One day I'll read it. So with the book club, what was driving me crazy was, like, I'm like, I just want to read my books. I can't read other books that are already not on my list, you know? So I dip in. I come for the community. It's fun. Like, we, you know, we go to brunch. We, like, hang out. We do talk about the book, but a lot of it is just, like, updating each other on our lives. So I'll go for, you know, the kiki. And then when we kind of rotate who picks the book, when the rotation comes to me, then I pick a book from the book, from my bookcase, and then we do it. But I hear you on that. It can, I can see the stress in your face.
It does. stresses. But I love that. That sounds great. And I do love mm-hmm. talking about books after. If I mm-hmm. get together with people and we've already all read the same book and then we chat about it, uh-huh. that's great. But during the reading process, it's like, let me do my thing.
Yeah.
I'm also like a library girl, which adds another layer to this. So yeah. I'm a library app Kindle girly, which adds another layer of like, I love the process of going through the app and requesting the books and reading them in enough time. It's like part of the fun for me. And that also doesn't line up well with like, when other people read things, it just is, that's part of the experience. It's like the lottery of like, did I get this book from the library? Did I read it fast enough? It's like, that's part of the fun.
For the I haven't been to the library to get a book.
Oh my God. Shamefully.
25 years, time. I know. Just terrible. I live around the corner from a New York City public library. Don't you have to return the book by certain times? Isn't that like stressful? Like you gotta.
Yeah, that's part. That's why you gotta get to reading. But I do it. I like it digitally, so I use the Libby app and I get library books to my Kindle. And even with that, you still have to read it within 21 days.
Oh, what?
Wow! Yeah. And then it like disappears. So short.
It disappears from your Kindle.
Oh my God! Whoa!
Oh my God!
So it's like a game. It's like a whole game. You have a whole system.
Yeah, and a book club would only interrupt that flow for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you said you read so far 13 books this year. Or do you have like a specific goal that you're trying to achieve each month or each year?
I feel like it would be cool to get to like 50 books at the end of the year.
Oh, wow.
Roughly a book a week, I think would be like cool. Wow. But I'm not putting too much pressure on myself for it. I do tend to read less in the summer. So I always do this where it's like the first half of the year I'm tearing through books and then summer comes and I'm like, I'm outside and I don't read anything. And then my book goal doesn't happen. So I now know that about myself. And so I'm being flexible with it. But it would be really cool if I could get through a book a week this year.
And how do you read? Like, what's your reading routine?
Yeah. So usually I have two books going at once. I do still read self-help. I know that I was like talking bad about it earlier, but I'm like, okay, I do need to learn things. My brain can't be one big like
romance
smut,
novel
session. As much as I would like it to be, I do have to like learn things, which you learn from the smut too. You learn.
You
the
do.
Smut,
sure.
I need to learn.
Yeah, sure.
That can't be all I learn.
Right.
And so I have a reading routine where in the morning, as part of my morning routine, that's where I read my nonfiction, my personal development, my finance books, my business books during that, you know, maybe 15, 20 minutes in the morning as part of my morning routine. And then any other time that I'm reading the rest of the day, if I'm reading, you know, at lunch or at night before bed, that's when I'm reading my smut. That's when I'm reading my fun books. So I usually have two books going at once pretty much at all times. And that is how I read usually.
Yeah, cool. Love that. I ask everyone, like anyone who I know is a reader, because I'm an aspiring reader. I've been aspiring for quite a long time now. I'm an aspiring reader. I have all these books I keep buying that I'm not reading. So I'm trying to like learn from different routines. And I like that, just reading 15 minutes in the morning, something to just get your brain like going, and then saving the fun stuff for like right before bed or like lunchtime, a little lunchtime treat or something.
Exactly. Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for sharing. So Kennedy Ryan, never heard of her. I got to add her to my list of more books to buy and never read.
She just came out with a new book earlier this month, which was like really fantastic. It's called This Could Be Us. Such a beautiful book. It is actually the sequel to another popular book she came out with in 2022 called Before I Let Go. So if you start with any of her books, I recommend starting with Before I Let Go and then reading the sequel, This Could Be Us. They're very, very beautiful books.
Lovely. I am going on a little trip and I do need a book to read on that trip. So this seems perfect. Nice. Okay. Can I tell you guys about Vanderpump Rules?
Yes.
We'll segue.
Let's rot. Yes.
Can we rot for a second?
Yeah.
So Les, do you know anything about Vanderpump Rules? Did you hear about Scandal or any of this? Do you know these people?
I've like heard these words.
Okay. Wow. The words.
I don't know what any of it means.
So I'll catch you up. So there was a huge scandal. There was a guy called Tom Sandoval who's a raging narcissist. I know that's a very overused term, but he is literally the dictionary definition, very agreed upon by everybody. He was in a 9-year relationship with a girl named Ariana. And last season, huge scandal hit. He was cheating on Ariana in like a 6-month long affair with one of her best friends on the show. Her name is Rachel. Was Raquel. She now goes by Rachel, which is her birth name. And so this season is post-scandal. Everybody kind of like reconciling their relationships and figuring things out. Rachel is not filming. She's not a part of this season. So it's just like everybody else. And of course, Sandoval with his crazy narcissism trying to like mend relationships. So I personally think this season's pretty interesting. I think there's been a lot of talk about like, is this the end of Vanderpump Rules? Like, what else are they going to talk about besides Sandoval? And, you know, people are like, I'm tired of Tom Sandoval. I don't want to hear it anymore. I've really been enjoying this season personally because I've been watching Vanderpump since season one. So I've seen the arc of like where these people have come from. And this season, they're all the most adult they've ever been. Like Lala has she's a mother. Many of them are mothers. A lot of them are married. Like they are living in their more mature era, trying to. So that's what also makes it fun. So what's been happening? So Tom Schwartz, who is Sandoval and Tom are like Tweedledee and Tweedledum. Yeah. So Schwartz plans this trip, this getaway to Lake Tahoe for everybody, inviting Sandoval. Ariana, who's his ex who got cheated on, she's not coming. Neither is her bestie, Katie. So they just bow out. Like, y'all have fun. We're not doing this.
Oh, good. Because Katie's also Schwartz's ex-wife. So that's
So
nice.
She ain't trying to fuck with him either.
Yeah.
Now, Lala, Sheena and her husband, and James and his little girlfriend, Allie. James, by the way, Les, is the ex-fiance of Rachel. Mm-hmm. So they all, it's just a web.
Oh, yeah. All entangled.
Mm-hmm. All entangled. These people are very incestuous. It's disgusting. Anyways. I mean, they've all hooked up with each other. And not even just like make out. Like they have sex. No. Like these people, it's so gross. Mm. Anyways, they all go on the trip. And they are open to hearing what Sandoval has to say. And if he's going to take accountability or what's happening here. Also, very recently, Lisa Vanderpump, who is she's like the matriarch of this group.
The grand dom.
She runs the restaurant where they all used to work. And she's a real housewife as well. So Lisa very recently sat down with Lala and a lot of the ladies and talked to them about her concerns for Sandoval because apparently his mental health has been in a very bad space. He talked about he had suicidal ideations. She recently lost a brother from suicide. So she's sat with the women and is like, just hear him out. Like, you know, he blew his whole life up. That's his fault. But he's now living in a very fragile, isolated state. You know, give him a chance type of thing. Lala is very much on her mental health kick. She's a new bitch. She's a mom. She's like not trying to live in this negative space. I love Lala this season. I've always been a Lala fan. She previously, Les, was like a raging alcoholic, a very angry girl, a bad bitch. Always had bad bitch energy. Like you always loved her.
She's so fun.
So fun, but very real. Like very, very real, but always got into it with people. But now she's in a new era. She's a mom. She's like she's worked on her anger issues. She's been sober now, like 3 years or something. Loving her. She's on her mental health kick. So she's like excited to hear what's going on with Sandoval. Sheena,
I've seen just like the memes. I'm already over Sheena. I can't.
Sheena is less. She's like quintessential.
She too is a narcissist.
Yeah. Very self-absorbed, cries a lot, like things always have to kind of be about her. However, this season, I kind of feel for her. And she gives a lot of context as to why she's been really struggling with this whole Sandoval thing, because her and Sandoval were like for real friends. When she first came into the group, she came in as somebody's mistress. So that was already a whole thing.
Oh my God. Yeah, she did. She birthed Vanderpump Rules, in all fairness.
She kind of did.
She did, with her scandalous rendezvous with someone's husband on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Mm. Right. So yeah. She kind of, that is a good point. She was kind of like one of the birthers of this whole show. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So when she first came into the group, like 10 years ago less, none of the girls would fuck with her. Like, just, they were horrible to her. They were really mean to her. But Sandoval was always very nice to her, she said. He always kept her included. He always, they would go to different events and he would pull her in for pictures when none of the girls would talk to her. So she's always felt like he's been very kind to her. Also, she shared during COVID, her podcast got canceled. She was pregnant. She had no money coming in and all kinds of expenses. Her husband's already kind of like, I don't know why he wasn't taking care of things, shaky. But he's already shaky.
He's shaky.
And she said one morning, she, again, in the depths of her despair of like, what is she going to do? She woke up to thousands of dollars in her PayPal account from Sandoval. He like sent her money to try to like make, keep her afloat, which is great context. Also checks out, he weirdly over the years has always been like very generous. Like he helped James pay for his proposal.
Oh
thing,
yeah,
Rachel.
That's
like,
right. Yeah.
That is one thing I do remember of him. He sucks, but that's one quality he has. He's like a very generous person. Mm-hmm. So she's been really struggling because she's like, he was a real friend to me. And I get it. We're supposed to like dead him now because we're all Team Ariana. But she's like, I'm also having my own internal emotions around this. So anyways, they go to Lake Tahoe. They do this like big spiritual exercise thing and she gets all emotional and Sandoval cries. She says, finally, this is like the first genuine tears she sees from him, not like performative tears, which I don't know with him. So
like, yeah, I don't know either. Even his generosity, I'm like, it makes, that tracks that like a narcissist buys affection.
Yeah, it can make sense.
Right?
Nonetheless, from her experience, she's like, I was down and out and this man saved me. So like, either way, it's real for her. But anyway, Sheena's in a very, this past episode, she's in a very tough spot because she is trying to be loyal to Ariana. Ariana has made it very, very clear, if you are friends with him, like, I will not be friends with you. Like, that's just her boundary. I can't do it. And so Sheena's trying to like hear her friend, but she also is like, similar to Lala, she's like, I also want my own peace. Like, I don't want to live in this hateful space always. Like, I don't want to always have this hate in my heart for Sandoval. And so she really wants to, like, forgive and move on. Not really, it doesn't have to be his friends, but kind of just, like, move on from it. But Ariana just, like, won't allow it. And anytime Sheena tries to bring up anything to Ariana, she just, like, shuts down. Which, I get it. This is about Ariana because this is her, this is her life that blew up the most, but it's not nice also seeing her just like not even try to listen to anybody else. You know, she's very much, you know, she's on Dancing with the Stars now. She's living her best life. She's got a cocktail book out. Like, she's getting all these opportunities post-scandal, which everyone is happy for her. But even Lala's like, I'm tired of this. Like, I also want to have a space to talk about how him blowing up our whole friendship group has affected me. Like, they feel like they can't even really share their own thoughts. And Lala made a good point because Lala was also involved in her own scandal, her husband. So she was married to this like gross Hollywood producer, like Harvey Weinstein-esque type.
Yeah, he wishes. I think that's who he aspired to be and never made it there. Yeah, he's so gross. Yeah.
So gross. She had a baby with him and then he had his own cheating scandal and all kinds of other craziness that came out. So she's, you know, embroiled in this, you know, bad relationship with her baby daddy and is trying to tell Ariana, like, having hatred in your heart, like, you have to let it go at some point. Like, that's not going to be healthy for you either. And she's like, I know better than anybody because I'm literally dealing with this dude and I'll have to deal with him for the rest of my life with our with our daughter. Ariana doesn't want to hear it. Like, she's just, like, not being receptive to anybody. And then I thought what was interesting in the episode, we finally get like a real moment at Ariana too. Cause I was like, why? Like, I get it. He did you so dirty in the most ultimate way. Like, I get it. You hate the shit out of him and you want everybody to hate him too. But it's also like, at what point are we going to just like,
Yeah, and the whole world already hated him. He was on, they were on the cover of the New York Times at one point, right, like with these people. Like it's the whole world, like he has enough hate coming to him, I think.
Yeah. And it's now been months now. You're doing your thing. He's doing whatever he's doing. Like at what point do we, you know, just kind of like squash this? And the campaign, like the hate campaign starts to dissipate. So she finally shares in an interview or in her confessional, which is like the most real moment, where she said she's scared that if he is able to come back in and start filming with everybody and is able to kind of work his way back into the group, that he's going to start to ice her out, because her boundary is she doesn't want to be around him at all. He seems fine to be with her, with not, whatever. So she's like, if he starts coming around and everybody starts bringing him back in, then she's going to be the one that ends up isolated. So she's trying to like really go to battle to maintain her rule, I guess, in this group, and to keep him out, because it could quickly switch to her being iced out, which I assumed. And but it was nice to hear her say it, because it's like, all right, where are we going with this like hate campaign? Like, we get it, we are all on your side, girl, but like, we can't do this forever. At some point, we gotta move on. So that's what's going on in Vanderpump, guys.
Wow.
I've been enjoying this season, honestly. Just seeing, I mean, Sandoval, I don't need to see him ever again, but just like seeing how these people are like D-list celebrities, right? But they're very well known, but you know, they're like real people walking around LA with like a camera crew attached to them, which is like very mind-boggling to me. But also seeing them all trying to grow up. Like Lala trying to be the voice of reason, somebody who previously was like drunk hysterical off her ass, like, screaming at people.
So how old are these people? Like age range wise, are they young?
Oh man, older? I want to say they're like in their 30s. All of them are in their 30s now. Okay. Yeah, Sandoval, he's like 40, I would say.
Tim is Schwartz. I think Schwartz is 40.
Yeah, but between 30 and 40, so grown as people.
Not that young then.
No.
Nope.
Not young at all. Raquel, Rachel, the one that was part of the scandal, she was probably the youngest one. She was like in her, even she was maybe like 27. So not that young either. But grown people, man, grown people. Just trying to.
Messy.
Yeah. It's like seeing messy people trying to do better. That's what makes it very entertaining for me. They're really trying, this crew. They're really trying.
Oh man.
Justine, what about you? What are you watching?
Yeah. I would love to talk about two things quickly and then one big thing. So the two things quickly, the Vince Staples show. If you guys have Netflix, go watch it. It's great. The episodes are about 18 to 20 minutes long, and it's all about his life in Long Beach, California, Vince Staples. And it is hysterical. If you like Atlanta, if you like a little bit of satire, but not too much, you will love the Vince Staples show. So shout out to him. And then also the Kacey Musgraves album. Oh my God. Yeah, it took over my whole weekend. Okay. So let's just context. She was one of the only white people who took a photo with Beyonce at the Grammys. And so I've been interested in her since then. So... I used to buy boy smells candles. She was all up in them boy smells campaigns. I was like, oh, she's pretty. Okay, whatever. And then I would just keep it moving. Like, I have seen this lady for years. I had no idea what she did. And then her album came out this Friday and I listened to it, and she is a songwriter. Oh my God. Brilliant songwriter. She has a song called Dinner with Friends that hit me in a really beautiful way. The first lyric says, dinner with friends in a city that you don't live in. And she's talking about all the things she'll miss when she dies. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, that is so true. There's nothing like that feeling. When the group chat is out the group chat and y'all made it to wherever the fuck and you're at dinner, it is one of the top tier feelings. And just writing, just the ability for her to write about those really special moments in life and having so many different ones. Incredible songwriter. So check out Kacey Musgraves' album, Deeper Well.
She said she's like... folk or country?
Country. Yeah, she's country folk. Definitely leans like she's very palatable. Like she's poppy sounding. But yeah, she's a great songwriter. And if you want to warm up for Cowboy Carter. It's a good one. That one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Noted.
I hope you're a Beyonce fan, Les. Are you?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, fabulous. Otherwise, we'd have to cancel this episode.
Oh, I know.
No questions asked.
Okay, right? Good. Right? Okay. And then my last thing that I would love to talk to you guys about and have like a really open discussion about is the film Oppenheimer. I finished it this weekend.
No, you finished.
And it
have
took
you seen
me
it, Les?
Have you
I
seen
not.
It? Good. No. It's taken me multiple days to finish this movie. And I have a lot of thoughts about it. The first hour and 20 minutes, Les, I was in disbelief that this film was even considered for any type of award.
Really?
I had no idea why. I could not figure out why this movie was up for any awards. There, because I told Natasha on our one of our last episodes, it's so lacking humanity. And as somebody who loves rom-coms, I feel like you can understand when it's a like a boy movie like that. And right. It's just like line, let's go. Line, let's go. And nobody's eating. Nobody's drinking. It's this guy. He has blue eyes. Who's your mother? I want to know why. Did you pick up your child from school? Who's with the wife? What are we doing? Like, I just had so many questions about everybody's humanity, and it was all being brushed under the rug for the atomic bomb. Mm-hmm. What? Mm-hmm. I don't give a fuck about that. Right. So I was, for the first half of the movie, I was really in turmoil because I was like, why is this man getting awards for acting? This is crazy. He's just reading lines. I had no idea. And then the second half of the movie, it did turn around for me a little bit because I watched that first half and I knew what to expect. Mm. So the second half, I was really looking for these Easter eggs. You know what I mean? And Natasha, you're a film and TV buff. Mm-hmm. When you watch Oppenheimer, did you find that you had to look for a lot of Easter eggs?
What do you mean Easter eggs? Like, what are you looking for?
Like, the one big one that I heard was he was having a conversation with one of his associates, Oppenheimer. Mm-hmm. And he said, the guy said to him, you want to be a man. You don't want to be a prophet because prophets are never right. Mm-hmm. And Oppenheimer said, well, I guess I'm up for it then. I guess I'm up for being a prophet. And that clicked to me. I was like, oh, that's why he's not eating or drinking, because you're not supposed to consider him like a human being. He's supposed to be right all the time.
Hmm.
That's why they wrote his character this way. That's why he's portraying this man this way in this like very inhumane, kind, very much godlike character.
Interesting. I feel like the filmmakers would say that they were hoping to accomplish different. I think they were trying to accomplish. I think that's what they would say, that they were hoping that this movie would bring humanize Oppenheimer.
Oh.
More so than not. Because I feel like what they're trying to show trying to show, you know, his turmoil of, you know, creating the nuclear bomb, and then now the nuclear bomb is out there. What does that mean for the planet? Like, for Earth and humanity?
Yes. Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
And then you see his, you know, you're supposed to see his, like, struggle with dealing with that and being that man that brought this bomb into, you know, the world. I see your point, you though, but I think that's what
you see what I mean?
I see your point, but I think that's what they would be like, no, we were trying to make him a human, not a prophet or not a figure.
Yeah. Well, that's not what I received.
It did not hit
for me. I see what you mean, though, because there was a lot of, especially with the sound editing, there was a lot with the sound editing, less the soundtrack, the score. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Oh, my God.
Great gowns, beautiful gowns.
Great gowns, beautiful gowns is exactly the way I would describe this film. That's exactly it. And just by the end, I was like really rooting for his wife, and he was just really messy. He was a messy, messy bitch. And
aren't they all?
The more powerful they get, the more messy they get.
Yes.
And she was the only one who landed with any type of humanity for me. But
Yeah.
And even her, I was like, I know she's making her own quaaludes. This lady was like addicted to a lot of stuff.
Had to.
This was like 1945, I think. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And she was living at basically a chemistry town that they made for these scientists. She was definitely making her own Quaaludes.
Terrible.
Custom Quaaludes.
Had to.
Yeah. I would love to know that story. I don't know. Whatever. And also what I thought was interesting was their addictions were pretty constantly present. And that brought me some humanity. Oppenheimer was smoking all the time. His wife was drinking all the time. Yeah. Probably drinking and smoking, and who knows what she had in her cigarette that I'm sure she rolled herself. And so that gave a little bit of humanity for me the last half of the movie. And I do like looking for those Easter eggs. I like looking for those little lines that give you indications as to what these people are like. So
their motivations. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That gave me a little bit more, but the rest, absolutely not. This movie was preposterous. I have no idea why this was nominated for anything. This shit was whack. Oh my God. It was so boring, bro. God. Oh my God.
I wasn't bored. I appreciated the history lesson because I barely remember learning about the Manhattan Project. And so I was pretty locked in. So I was like, what was this? This is a huge part of American history. Or it's like world history. What happened? And I appreciated that. But I feel you in that it being the best picture of the year, it was definitely not my best picture. And the acting noms, I get it. Like, we've seen more emotional, you know, full-bodied, like, performances this year versus what was delivered in Oppenheimer. I hear you.
Yes. And I think I'll just, on my last note, I think Barbieheimer and the whole hoopla surrounding Barbieheimer in 2023, I think will be studied. And I think it's very evident that it was a strike year. I think the writing, lackluster. The impact of these films, lackluster, I think. There's no soul in either movie. Like
Barbie and Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
I mean, neither are my favorite. I don't know if the strike affected them though, because I feel like Oppenheimer has been in production.
No.
For, like, forever.
Yeah, I'm saying
but there wasn't anything else.
Yeah, there wasn't anything else.
Anything else to hype.
To contradict it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, it was a dry year. You compare Barbie and Oppenheimer to Everything Everywhere, please. What were you going to say, Les?
I was just going to say, like, Barbie was also great gowns, beautiful gowns, in another way.
And even essential.
When people were so up in arms about, like, Barbie was not intersectional and it doesn't represent this and it doesn't represent that. And I'm like, one, did we expect it to? Two, does it need to? It was like pink bubblegum feminism for a good time. It was an excuse for the girlies to get together and wear pink.
Yeah.
I don't think it needed to be anything more than that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Barbie doesn't need to tell the story of intersectionality in that way. Because if it would have, it wouldn't have done a good job. So, like, let it be pink, let it be what it was. And that's fine.
It definitely delivered in those aspects. Nothing more. Just seeing that's hilarious. I'm happy you watched Oppenheimer.
Thanks.
I love this little, we need to make this a segment. Justine watches movies she would never normally watch and gives her thoughts. Anyways, thank you so much, Les, for joining us. This was really fun. Thank you for the book recommendations.
Yes. Thank you for having me. I learned so much.
Yes. Good.
Little Oppenheimer, little Vanderpump.
Yeah.
Can you tell our listeners where they can find you? Do you have any exciting episodes coming up? Anything they should look out for?
Absolutely. So yeah, you can listen to new episodes of Balanced Black Girl every Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts. We're on Apple, Spotify, full video episodes on YouTube if you like the visuals. I mentioned a few of those episodes, you know, Kennedy Ryan, Tembi Locke, those will probably be out by the time this episode comes out, but just really, really wonderful conversations. I was excited to have them. I think y'all will love them. And you can find me on social media. I'm at BalanceLess on Instagram and TikTok.
Nice. Great. Go find her on all the things, guys. And yes, rate, review, subscribe. Find us on all of the socials. And we'll be back next week.
Bye, guys.
Bye.